Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
For this is what the Sovereign Lord says.
Why do you need prophets to tell people who you are and what you want?
If you can justify everything that the God of the Bible has done, then you can justify any of your behavior.
A lot of this mentality is trickling into what is now mainstream right-wing Christianity.
I am capable of empathy greater than this God of the Bible.
This is a Bible that they tell kids. This is the good Lord. This is the good book. He is fantasizing about murder, mass murder.
Head over to sacrilegiousdiscourse.com right now to find out how to leave us a review or support us on Patreon.
Husband!
Wife!
Do you know what we're doing today?
Well, I believe we're doing a Q&A.
A well overdue Q&A for yes. Little Maddie. Chapter 24.
Yeah. So I don't even remember what that chapter was about.
Well, Matthew had some shit to say. He or his people, whatever, that wrote for him.
Right.
Had some shit to say, and it got real.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, are you you ready to Q&A the Matthew 24?
Sure.
All right. Let's do it.
Okie dokie. Okay, we are doing the Q&A for Little Maddie, chapter 24.
Okay.
And this is going to be part one, this chapter is, of a discourse that Jesus gives on Mount Olive.
Okay.
Okay. Right. And this is like one of the most confusing chapters in the entire New Testament because Jesus does like this crazy 180 and starts like spitting apocalyptic prophecy.
Yeah.
And it just comes kind of out of nowhere. And we're like, what the fuck? And when I say he, I mean Matthew. And when I say Matthew, I mean whoever was writing for Matthew.
Yeah.
Okay, the book of Matthew.
Right.
Shifts from stories about Jesus's ministry into something that sounds very Old Testament. Like, it's like Daniel, Ezekiel, Zechariah. And then, although we haven't read the book of Revelation, because that comes at the end of the New Testament, so obviously we're not there yet. I've kind of peeked at some of it before, and I just like it's all of that rolled together.
Okay.
It's a really fucking weird ass chapter.
Yeah.
It's often called the Olivet Discourse because Jesus gives this speech on Mount Olive.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
And it comes after leaving the Jerusalem temple.
Okay.
Okay, and so the disciples have asked, when will this happen and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? They asked that at the end of the previous chapter.
All right.
Okay, and so this causes like a huge problem because nobody knows exactly what the question means. Like, are they talking about what is the sign of the destruction of Jerusalem? Like the end of Jerusalem? The end of the world? Both? Like what?
Well, it leaves open a lot of interpretation for people today, which is problematic somewhat, even though a lot of the talking that's done throughout this book points to that the return of Jesus is going to be in their lifetimes.
Right. So, this generation, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And Jesus doesn't really clarify it. He makes it seem like, oh, you know, the destruction of Jerusalem, which is the end of the world. And so, yeah, like you said, it seems like it's imminent. It's any minute now. It's around the corner.
Right.
It's coming. And he's about to die, too. So there's that.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's all like real fucking weird.
I mean, you could say that about the whole book so far.
The whole fucking Bible is weird, well, yeah. If we're being honest.
Yeah.
But yeah. So this book is split into four parts. Okay.
All right.
Part one is the destruction of the temple and its implications. We get the flow of history until Jesus's return.
Sure.
Okay. The second part is about Jesus describing the sign of his coming and the end of the age.
Okay.
Whatever that means.
All right.
Okay. Part three is about the coming of the Son of Man.
Got it.
Which is
Jesus
sure. or the Son of God or like whatever the fuck that means, guy.
Right.
Okay. And then the last part four, is Jesus talking more about his coming, his impending coming.
Right.
Or the Messiah's coming, like whatever.
Yeah.
But he comes from like a different direction. He talks about how no one knows the day or hour of his coming.
Got it.
Okay, so those are the four main parts.
Okay.
Okay. Just to, I'm trying to like help you remember a little bit what this chapter was about.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the beginning, the first part where we're talking about the destruction of the temple, Jesus predicts that that's going to happen, which is
such a hard prediction given that they wrote it after the destruction of the temple. So,
right.
You know?
Right.
I just got to say that.
Yeah. No, it's less a prediction, more of a, let's pretend that he said it before it happened.
Right.
Yeah. His prediction brings up two questions, and then Jesus describes general world conditions during the period between his ascension and the time immediately preceding his second coming.
Okay.
Which is like supposed to be a very short period.
Sure.
Okay. So let's start with verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom, will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So Jesus never actually says the end of the world will come.
Right.
So he's definitely talking about an age. So that's why the disciples are asking about the end of the age, not the end of the world. Okay. That's different from saying that the planet is going to explode and die.
Well, and Jesus kind of alluded to the fact that the heaven would be here on earth earlier in this book, too.
Earlier, yeah. So. Yeah. And heaven on earth would be more of a cultural, living together peaceably kind of thing.
Right.
And us all being harmonic with one another.
Sure.
Yeah. So, not just like, and we're all sitting on the clouds together. Something that I found interesting was that to a first century Jew, the end of the age meant the end of the current era and the beginning of God's reign.
Okay.
Okay. The way that modern people would take it, the planet Earth explodes imagery.
Yeah.
This comes from much later Christian imagination and is attributed a lot to a lot of art that came out.
Sure.
That kind of made that even worse.
Right.
You know what
I mean? There's a lot of things, like even the Left Behind series that was written, there's a lot of people that take things from that. Mm-hmm. Specifically that are not in any religious doctrine.
I'm actually so glad that you mentioned that. Like, that is so ironic because I literally mentioned the Left Behind series later in my notes here.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a little interesting tidbit that is actually really cool with regard to that.
Sure. Sure.
Okay. So that's what I'm going to say about the first section. Okay.
Okay.
Moving on to the second section, he describes the sign of his coming and the end of the age. So let's read verses 15 and 16, okay?
All right.
It goes, so when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand, then those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. And I always go back and try to find what the fuck is he quoting from, what did it mean?
I remember talking about the abomination of desolation or whatever.
Abomination. King Obama. Yeah, the abomination that causes desolation.
Right.
Yeah. So Daniel does mention that in three different places, chapters 9, 11, and 12. So in chapter 9, verse 27, it says, he will confirm a covenant with one, he will confirm a covenant with many for 1 7, which is 1 week. In the middle of the seven, in the middle of the week, he will put an end to sacrifice and offering. And at the temple, he will set up an abomination that causes desolation until the end that is decreed is poured out on him or on it, the desolated city.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then in chapter 11... Verse 31, it reads, his armed forces will rise up to desecrate the temple fortress and will abolish the daily sacrifice. Then they will set up the abomination that causes desolation. And then in verse 12 of Daniel, in chapter 12 of Daniel, verse 11,
right.
It reads, from the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. Mm. I remember us going, whoa, that's fucking specific.
Yeah, yeah.
So the historical background on Daniel, if you'll recall, is the reign of the Seleucid king Antiochus IV Epiphanes.
Okay.
Okay, he was the big baddie worst.
Right,
horrible.
Right.
Okay, he ruled over Judea in the 2nd century BCE, and he tried to impose Greek religious practices.
Sure.
He was the meanest.
Yeah.
I don't know if you recall.
To the Jewish folks, anyway.
I mean, no, he was bad to everybody.
Okay.
No, right. Epiphanes IV... was a fucking nightmare.
Right.
Okay. He was bad. Antiochus IV Epiphanes. He was a nightmare to everybody.
Okay.
Okay. According to other Jewish sources, he outlawed Jewish practices. He desecrated the temple. He stopped sacrifices. He installed pagan worship in the temple. He was bad news all the way around.
So it sounds like he's referring to this guy.
Daniel was definitely talking about this guy.
Right. Right.
They couldn't name him.
Sure.
Because that would get them jailed.
Right.
So they had an
abomination of desolation.
It's kind of like how you don't mention King Orange Tit's name if you're on, like, say, Facebook or Reddit.
Sure.
You refer to him as the Pumpkin King.
Right.
You know,
right.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Or Kinkles McDougal or whatever.
Wouldn't want the
FBI
showing up at your door. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you have these other nicknames and, King Antiochus Epiphanes IV, or whatever the fuck his name is, his nickname was Abomination That Causes Desolation.
Got it.
Okay?
Yeah.
The phrase itself probably refers to some horrifying sacrilege that makes the temple spiritually ruined, which we remember he did a lot of that.
Sure.
He would sacrifice animals or people even in those temples that were not cool, and he would make their temple unclean.
Okay.
He was so bad.
Yeah.
The exact details of what happened are debated, but the basic idea is that what Daniel was saying is someone will commit an act so fucking blasphemous that the holy place becomes abandoned and or desolate. Desolation.
Sure.
Desolate.
Sure.
So Daniel's original audience understood this definitely to be a reference to Antiochus.
Right.
So Jesus is basically quoting Daniel saying the same kind of thing that Daniel warned us about, that Antiochus fuck.
Yeah.
It's about to happen again. Mm. Just FYI.
Okay.
Which again,
so they're stealing material from the Old Testament.
Right. After the event already happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think
that's one of the things that bothers me about this book. It's just there's very little that's original about it. They're taking everything from the Old Testament, mm-hmm. and then the only thing original about this is that they're stomping all over the traditions of what Judaism is.
Yeah.
You know, like they're like, nah, fuck that. We're not doing that. Nah, right. Fuck this. We're not doing this. You know,
at the same time, blinking and looking right you in the face and being like, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
I'm totally doing all the original Jewish things. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the problem.
I just don't. It makes no sense to me how they can abandon everything that is Judaism, and
right.
then be like, well, you should know because I'm the son of God. Like, how? Why? Why? Why should you sound like any other fucking false prophet trying to be the guy? You
right.
know, like whatever.
Right.
You just sound like a fucking salesman.
Yeah. It was only the fact that John the Baptist was running around saying, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
And then he went to fucking jail and got beheaded. So it's like,
yeah.
I don't know, guys.
Right.
This ain't it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But who am I, right? So Jesus applies Daniel's imagery to his own quote unquote future, the future that already happened when it's being written. Right?
Yes. Yes. Right.
Because this is written after the
Jesus
second
died
temple.
In the second temple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So the immediate historical interpretation is that Jesus is predicting the Roman destruction of Jerusalem in 70 CE when the Romans destroyed the temple.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's that. Moving on to verse 19. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. And we were like,
what?
Yeah. That's so random and weird. But, okay, I will stand back a little bit. It is random and weird to say, but this is actually a very Jewish apocalyptic image.
Okay.
That means this suffering is going to be so severe that ordinary human vulnerabilities are about to become completely unbearable. Mm. Pregnant women and nursing mothers are specifically mentioned here because they can't run away easily, so they're not able to flee. Mm-hmm. They're responsible for dependent children and babies. Like, they can't just
run. Up and leave, right.
Yeah. They're physically vulnerable. It's doing that thing where, though, it raises up, like, what it considers the least and is like, even these fuck faces won't be able to right? run. And, yeah. and I just fucking hate that.
Yeah.
He's basically imagining a catastrophe where survival itself becomes difficult, and it very much echoes a lot of the Old Testament language that we ran across, where they would always take the women's plight
yeah.
and then use that as though they give a shit about women.
Right, right.
Like, stop. during invasions, prophets would frequently offer similar laments, but the women and the children, which, does that not sound familiar? They're right. still doing that to this day.
Yep.
Because war brings famine, displacement, and violence.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So it makes sense, but I hate it.
So women and children are just used to garner empathy and whatever for their cause.
What about the women yeah. and the children?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's always that.
Yeah.
Like,
because let's be honest, they weren't treated well.
No, they didn't give a shit about the women and the yeah. children. They were just property.
Yeah.
So I'm like, don't pretend you give a shit about the woman and the children.
Yeah.
You do not give a shit about the woman and the children.
Right.
All right. So verse 20, this one also made us laugh, reads, pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
We went on a great length, like, yeah, I really hope that the apocalypse on like a Monday or something and not during winter. It does kind of make sense, though, because I hate to admit that it makes sense because it's still just so janky.
Okay.
You know? But during the first century, Sabbath restrictions very severely affected travel. And Jesus is like, you know, I'm telling you that you don't have to follow, like, the rule to the letter if it's for a good fucking reason. Like, you can save a life.
Yeah.
You know, if it means breaking the Sabbath to save a life, save the life.
Sure.
But he's like, but y'all fucks gonna follow this rule no matter what. So when the apocalypse comes, I hope it's not on a Sabbath, since y'all fucks will follow the rules and not flee on the Sabbath. You'll roll over and let them kill ya. So many Jews would not travel far on the Sabbath, and the city gates might not even be open. They'd probably be closed, so they couldn't
sure.
even flee.
Right.
And then, plus the religious authorities might even object to everyone fleeing because, bro, it's the Sabbath. Rules be rules. Lay over, die.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So Jesus is like, I know how y'all be on the fucking Sabbath. I hope that works out for you.
Yeah.
Which I'm like...
you would think that... So, that, I mean, God's going to be the one directing all of this, right?
Right.
So you would think that God wouldn't purposefully have a bunch of people just die because he decides to have it.
He put it on a Saturday, Sunday. Yeah.
Right. Like, that's asinine.
Wait, gee, I hope that the plan that I know, because I am Jesus and Jesus is Yahweh and we're both the same, right?
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Like, we're a trinity.
Right.
We wrote the plan together because we're the same guy.
Yeah.
We use the same fountain pen.
Yeah.
I hope that I wrote it good.
Like, well, it's just you would be asking them to break a rule that you created already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you're like, hey, you should flee, except that I told you not to do that on these days. So,
right.
You know, die, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. you're going to get punished either way.
Right.
Like, yeah. I'm going to punish you for being stupid by having my son yell at you.
Yeah.
Or you're going to do something stupid on the Sabbath, like try to save your life or save somebody else's life. You worked on the Sabbath and my son didn't get you for, you know, doing the wrong thing, I'm going to get you for doing the other thing.
Right.
So you're either going to get yelled at by the son or the father.
If there's one thing I've learned about the Bible, you can't win.
Right.
There's no winning.
It, like, all the times that I was like, you're always wrong. Like, Let me take that back. It's not you, husband. You're not always wrong.
God's always wrong.
The fucking Bible's always
right,
wrong.
Right, yeah.
Because how can Jesus and God be the same guy using the same fucking fountain pen to write the same fucking plan?
Yeah.
And then Jesus be like, oh, hope that works out for you. I don't know the hour or the day. Only my Father does. Like, shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up. Yeah. Them church people up in charge that supposedly God is speaking through them, they told me that you all are the same. Hmm. So, fuck you. You know.
Right.
You know the future. You can't have it both ways, asshole. So, Jesus is imagining Jewish followers trying to flee during a crisis.
Sure.
Right? And the Sabbath mention is actually a clue that the original setting of this book is very Jewish and very first century.
Okay.
Because he does say, yikes, the Sabbath is really rough on y'all. Rule following Sabbath people that don't do things on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
Right? So that like tells us that, oh shit, okay, I guess they took the Sabbath very seriously still then. It does suggest that Jesus is talking to people living under Jewish law, not necessarily giving a universal disaster timetable.
Sure.
So that in itself is kind of interesting from a historical literary reference.
Yeah.
It helps us place it in time.
Right, right.
In Matthew chapter 12, Jesus gets into this conflict with Pharisees over Sabbath observance. I don't know if you recall. Like, we talked about that.
Kind of, I think, yeah.
Way back in chapter 12, right?
Right.
His disciples pick grain on the Sabbath and he heals on the Sabbath, right?
Yeah.
Remember all that?
Mm-hmm.
And so his point is not that Sabbath restrictions are meaningless. He's arguing against a view of Sabbath that prevents acts of mercy, survival, and human need. Okay?
I guess. Except for the one time they were like cooking, they were doing something. I can't remember what it was. It didn't seem very...
Right.
Like, it didn't seem like something that needed to be done.
They were healing a guy who was, like, blind or had leprosy or something.
He's still
going to
be that way tomorrow. He's still going to be that way tomorrow, you know?
Yeah. Like, you didn't have to... That wasn't saving a life.
Right.
That was, like, purposely, intentionally flaunting the law because you could.
So I take issue with that because that's not how it came across.
No, and his guys that were, like, eating the grain, they weren't starving.
Right.
They were just like, meh. I'm hungry. I'm hungry.
Right. No, it felt very much like they were just flaunting the rule breaking.
He wasn't looking for good examples. He was making intentionally shitty examples and pretending they were good examples.
Right, right.
And that's what I have a problem with.
Yeah.
He's like, break the law. Go ahead. It's fine. Because we have good reasons. You know why? Because I'm Jesus and I said so.
But that's the whole problem with this book is that it is so hard to sort out what Jesus's message actually is, and he doesn't make it easier. He's just like, you know, do shit and don't do other shit, and you know, all you need is love, man. And
you're
gonna be wrong most of the time, so you're probably gonna die and burn in hell. So like, you know, have fun.
Because I do hate you.
Have fun sorting all that out,
right?
Because you know, I'm not gonna clear it up any.
I'm Jesus.
I'm gonna go die here, so I'll see you guys.
Peace out. It'll be fine because I get to come back. You don't, but I do. Like, fuck off, God. So there's this famous rabbinic principle about quote unquote saving a life.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
The idea that preserving human life overrides most religious obligations.
Okay.
And that was already developing in Jewish thought around that same time period.
Sure.
So that's cool to know.
Yeah.
So Jesus's position on this was not actually wildly outside Judaism, even though you and I were like, what? Because we had been reading the Bible and had been led to believe, like, you don't fuck with Yahweh's law.
Right.
He don't give a shit. You pick up sticks on the wrong day, he will smite you and your family.
Right. Uzzah is, you know, you can't even help fix the right up the ark, you know?
Yeah.
Like that, he got struck down.
Jesus don't give a fuck. I mean, Yahweh don't give a fuck.
None of them give a fuck.
Nobody gives a fuck. My point here, though, is that apparently this wasn't a big deal, but that's not what we were led to believe from reading.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like Yahweh very much was like, I don't fucking care if a mosquito flies up your nose. Don't move unless I tell you to.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So many Jewish teachers agreed that saving life takes priority over the Sabbath observance, apparently.
Okay.
Again, that goes against what we read, but sure. Apparently, historically speaking, and according to other sources, that was already a developing idea. And right. Jesus was like, y'all old bucks got this, you boomers, if you will, got this wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know.
No, I mean, the boomers they on this did one. Have it wrong, but like, if we're taking this as a literal interpretation of how God wants you to operate, and right. we're basing it off the Old Testament, then maybe we didn't.
The, the principle was wrong, but it doesn't fucking matter.
Right.
If Yahweh is real and you're supposed to believe in him and follow his fucking rule.
Right, and that's the biggest problem. We can't really sort through. Like, all Jesus is doing right now is making it harder to sort through mm-hmm. what God has intended for humans versus what he has not. And just to clarify, like, we're speaking as though God were a real entity. We know that he is not. And
but these people believe that he was. Right, so we're trying to operate under that.
We're trying to sort through on that level, right? Right.
We're meeting those people where they were. These people were like, nah, man, Yahweh for realsies.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, well, taking you at that, meeting you where you are, Yahweh for realsies, he gonna smite your ass if you do shit on the fucking Sabbath.
Right, right.
So I don't know where this other ideas are coming from, but apparently they were.
Right.
So I don't know.
Well, this whole book has bothered me.
This book is
wrong. Because of how it's just throwing everything from the Old Testament up in the air and saying, well, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So when Jesus talks about fleeing a deadly invasion, which would obviously qualify as saving life.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
He's talking about practical restrictions, not saying that Sabbath law should prevent escape. Okay.
Okay.
Since the city gates might be closed and travel might be socially restricted, authorities or hostile neighbors might make movement harder.
Sure.
And people might hesitate because fleeing would involve carrying supplies or traveling beyond accepted distances. So, I mean, it was more than just like, don't do shit on the Sabbath. Shit will be hard on the Sabbath, regardless of whether you think it's right or wrong, regardless how Yahweh feels about it, regardless how I feel about it, it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
So I really sincerely hope it don't happen on the Sabbath, is sure. what he's saying. But I still take issue with that because I'm like, you are God. You know.
Yeah.
Don't tell me you don't. You literally, you keep saying that, okay, whatever. I'm going to stop. I'm repeating myself. So he's assuming that his audience will still be living within Jewish Sabbath culture and thus know exactly what the Sabbath means.
Yeah.
And again, this helps place it in time historically within literary context.
Sure.
And so Jesus has spent the earlier chapters portraying himself as someone who prioritizes human need over strict Sabbath interpretation, arguing that hunger, healing, and mercy matter more than rituals and override the Sabbath restrictions. Which, again, is problematic because he's, like, suddenly trying to say, have some morals and ethics. And we're like, we were saying that the whole fucking time, that Yahweh is neither moral nor ethical.
Right.
But it doesn't matter.
But apparently it took thousands of years to get here and decide that some other way because he's going to now sacrifice his son or whatever the fuck's going on right now.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. it's such a slap in the face, like, look, we've been reading this book and we've known you were wrong all along. And now mm-hmm. you're like, oh, yeah, our bad for all those thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And we're going to change things up now.
And then when you argue with Christians, they will tell you things like when you argue about how God committed a genocide, right? They're
yeah.
like, oh, it's not ours to argue ethics and morals.
Right.
Whatever God decides, it's automatically right because God.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but Jesus is literally saying
God was wrong.
God was wrong. God was unjust and immoral.
Yeah.
And he's reinterpreting the laws to be more just and moral.
But then they would say, well, that's God. And we're like,
So God did change his mind.
Yeah, right, right. Like that. That's essentially what's going on. God changed his mind.
Even though he doesn't change.
If we're taking this as a real thing, right?
Right.
God changed his mind.
Right.
That's all that's happening.
God changed his mind.
And not in a very clear way either.
Right, so. Because then he's like, Right. I'm Jesus. He's just my dad. I don't fucking know. I'm just a guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I am the son of God and I do magic and I bring people back, but what can I know? I'm just a guy. I'm just human.
Yeah.
God, I just, like, I'm so angry at this fucking character.
Oh, yeah.
This book sucks.
Right.
Let's see. So there's also a broader historical irony here. Okay. The destruction of Jerusalem in 70 CE happened during the first Jewish-Roman War, right? Okay. And Jewish groups actually had to make very difficult decisions about fighting, fleeing, and observing religious practices during wartime.
Sure.
So the Sabbath was not an abstract theological issue. It was something that they had literally just been dealing with as they were writing this fucking book.
Right. So these are ideas that are in the book because that was specifically what they were dealing with at that time.
Yeah.
When the book was written.
Yeah. They were like, wow, this happened on the Sabbath and it was so rough. And so then they're like, let's have Jesus say, golly, I hope it doesn't happen on the Sabbath.
Right.
Like, fuck. So, yeah, all of that affected military strategy, survival, all of that.
Yeah.
And so they took advantage of what they already knew and what they had just experienced like the day before.
Sure.
And it fucking pisses me off that we're supposed to pretend that this shit is real. It's right. So disrespectful to my brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apologies to my brain.
Right.
You know,
right.
For what I keep exposing it to. This is bullshit. All right. So we're moving on to the third part. Okay. The coming of the Son of Man.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So we're going to read verses 23 and 24.
Okay.
At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here is the Messiah, or there he is, do not believe it. For false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect.
Again, other people doing miracles.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody on the street corner doing magic.
Yeah.
And angels all over the fucking place falling out the sky. Right. Pulling demons out of people. Exorcisms everywhere. Yeah. Every which way.
Like, Jesus, you ain't special.
No, right. He just wasn't. He was able to walk on water, which was a big deal because apparently none of the other prophets could handle the weather and the storms and shit like that.
Whatever.
But
That's if we're taking, like, I mean,
again,
yeah, I mean, you have to make so many logical and, like, just, you have to make so many leaps mentally to get to the point where, sure, you're like, okay, yeah, this is all real.
Yeah.
Like the amount of just mental gymnastics that have to happen to believe this bullshit that's in this book is just astronomically large.
Yeah. It's asinine.
Yeah.
So our question was, as you just stated, if everyone is doing miracles and claiming divine authority, how are people supposed to know which prophet is real?
Right.
And Christian thinkers will emphasize things like doctrine and moral character and tradition and prophecy fulfillment and community discernment. You know by just knowing.
But but let's just jump back one second here. If one of these other fucking prophets had won the fucking theological battle, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You don't think they'd be prophecy stuffing their fucking dude as well?
Oh, they sure as fuck would.
Like, that's absolutely the way that would have gone.
Yeah.
They're going to make whoever wins the battle of the book that gets published
gets to tell the story.
Gets to tell the story, and they get to make it sound correct, right?
Yeah.
You're obviously trying to win over your Jewish counterparts, so you're going to make it sound like you're fucking worshiping this God from the Old Testament.
Listen, this is what happened. This is what happened. Do you remember when, for 5 minutes, there were two types of VCRs? Betamax and
VCRs.
VHS.
Yeah, VHS, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know which was the superior?
Betamax, yeah.
Correct. They were superior, but we didn't get the superior product.
Right.
Because just because one product is superior doesn't mean that that's what the leaders or the people in power will promote.
Right. Well, my understanding is that laser discs were superior to DVDs.
Mm-hmm. They were. They are.
Right.
Yeah.
And those didn't take off either.
They didn't take off, but people do still buy them. You can still get them.
Sure.
But they're not, like, you have to kind of go out of your way a little bit.
Right.
I mean, not a lot of it, just a little bit.
Right.
But it's still, we don't get the superior product we don't get the superior religion. Okay? That's my point here.
Yeah, I mean, I would have totally been much happier with, like, Zeus and the whole
Roman gods.
Roman god thing, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It depends on, like, how many babies they had to eat. I don't know what all the ins and outs were.
Rituals withstanding, you know? I mean, right. Just, you know.
Rituals withstanding. Yeah. So we had all these questions, and Christians are like, you just know by knowing. You know because you know, right?
Yeah.
But if you read the book, the Bible, if you will, the chapter never really answers that question, and we don't get, like, this clear answer on, but how will I know if God is Jesus?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Every man for himself. Good luck.
Yeah.
No research I could find. Every bit of research was like, yeah, there's no answer for that.
Right.
Because
right.
You know why?
Because
there's not one.
There's right. Yeah.
So how do you know?
You don't.
Because yeah. The book sucks.
You know, it would be a lot. I feel like if Christians could just admit that I don't know.
Yeah.
If they could say that more often.
Yeah.
I'd be a lot happier.
Yeah. Don't tell me you know by knowing and right. That if you open your heart and magic gets inside it with glitter and Jesus will tell you the answer in your fucking ear.
Because you know what atheists are really good at doing is saying, I don't fucking know.
Right.
That's what we're really good at.
I mean, that's what scientists do too.
Right. We like talking about it
yeah.
Because we're endeavoring to find out.
And we're like, right? I think this could be an idea or this might happen.
Right.
Or I believe this happens, but like I have zero proof for that.
But I think that's why I like secular and atheist people generally a little bit better.
Yeah.
Right. Because we are open to the idea that we could be wrong and we want to find out more about why we're wrong or what could be right. You know, like that's what we want. We want to find things out.
Yeah.
So
what's really interesting to me as a person who has OCD.
Yeah.
Is that one of the major things that people with OCD have to practice, and it is literally a practice, is sitting in the discomfort of not knowing.
Yeah.
Of like a lot of times the compulsion that somebody with OCD will do is to calm an obsessive thought that they have, right?
Sure.
And so the idea behind it is not to get rid of the obsessive thought. That's just always going to be there.
Yeah.
Because your brain just has them.
Right.
Right. The idea is to not do the compulsion to try to get rid of the obsessive thought. It's just to sit in the discomfort of, if I don't perform this compulsion, things could go bad. Things could be good. Who knows?
Right.
And I have to get okay with that.
Yeah.
And so as a person who loves and appreciates science and not knowing the answer, that's really interesting to try to, like, resolve those two.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's just a little bit outside the scope of this, but just thought I'd toss that out there.
Sure.
That it's not always easy to not know, but it is always easy to... it's not always easy to be comfortable not knowing, but it's always easy to admit not knowing.
Right. Well, and personally, I feel like it's a better place to be because it's just like I actually enjoy not knowing things because it gives me something to work on to find out. Like I have ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And my brain is going a million miles a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And
it sure is.
I have to constantly learn something new about something every second, sometimes twice in that second, you know? So I love the idea of learning about different things and how they connect to each other and how they work and all these things. And so when we're reading the Bible and none of it connects, it's just like, oh my God, like what the actual fuck is this shit?
I just had like this weird, crazy thought. I wonder how many Christians are just people who are, they have undiagnosed OCD because they cannot sit in the discomfort of not knowing.
Right.
And they have to have the magical answer.
Sure.
Like, I'm just pulling that out of my ass. I'm not a doctor. I don't know shit about shit.
Look, I think it's a very comforting thought to think that you know what's going to happen to you after you die. I think I do. If I could give that to myself and my loved ones with the idea that it's a fact, I think I would think that's a good thing if I could know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because then you can plan for it. Then you can understand it better. But the truth is that we don't know. I have a good idea that we just kind of die, you know, like that. That's kind of my
death is
that's
death.
That's what I'm operating under at the current point, at this current point in my life, right? Sure. And that to me is enough, right? I'm not expecting more. It's a reason to live your life to your fullest. It's a, you know, it's a reason to care for the people around you even more so than you would if you were going to live forever, I suppose, right? Like it gives mm-hmm. you a certain time frame that you're here on this earth and to operate. So
right.
But I don't, like, I almost feel like having God and heaven and all this shit makes people socially lazy.
Well, yeah.
Because they often don't give a fuck about this world.
They're just passing through.
Don't give a fuck about other people that they interact with because
just passing through.
You know, if you're not part of their little church clan, then you're worthless, you know? Right. So it's very sad to me that these people operate in such a way that they can't connect with most of humanity outside of their small little group. Mm-hmm. Like it's a hindrance to our society. It's a hindrance to them. It's a hindrance to
medicine, their family. It's technology.
Our government, you know, everything. But
education.
I just can't understand why we all want to be why that feeling of knowing that there's this comforting thing after death is more important than living your life.
True. That should be a bumper plate. I said a bumper plate. A bumper sticker. God.
I'm gonna print it on a plate and nail it to the...
Throw it to somebody's bumper.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, okay, let's move on and read verse 29.
Okay.
Immediately after the distress of those days, quote, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken, not stirred.
Yeah, and Chicken Little will be running around with his head, you know, on fire or something.
Chicken Little told you that the sky was falling. If it was, would you still come crawl back again?
Right.
I bet you would, my friend.
Right, that's the one.
Aerosmith?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That actually comes, it's a quote, and I was like, where is it from? It's from Isaiah chapter 13. I will read verses 9, 10, and 11.
Okay.
See, the day of the Lord is coming, a cruel day with wrath and fierce anger to make the land desolate and destroy the sinners within it. The stars of heaven and their constellations will not show their light. The rising sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. I will punish the world for its evil, the wicked for their sins. I will put an end to the arrogance of the haughty and will humble the pride of the ruthless.
Okay.
All right. And then moving on to verse 30. Then will appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then all the peoples of the earth, or tribes of the land, will mourn when they see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory.
Yeah.
Okay, that comes from Daniel and Isaiah.
Okay.
Okay, Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. In my vision at night I looked, and there before me was one like a Son of Man. The Aramaic phrase is actually human being. But the phrase Son of Man is retained here and in many translations because of its use in the New Testament as a title of Jesus.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Coming with the clouds of heaven, he approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed.
But of course, we're talking about God there in the Old Testament, God, right?
In Daniel, yeah.
Yeah, but now they're equating it to Jesus, and there is no way to make that work.
They changed the language to try to make it more Christian-y.
Yeah, but this is exactly why they like to say, well, Jesus and God are just, they're the same thing, but they're different.
They're clear.
Because then they can be both, and you can be like, well, it applies to all these things. So.
It's the same, only different.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, ice and vapor and fucking whatever.
Ice cubes. Yeah. So Isaiah chapter 34, verses 2, 3, and 4 read, the Lord is angry with all nations. His wrath is on all their armies. He will totally destroy them. He will give them over to slaughter.
That tracks.
Their slain will be thrown out. Their dead bodies will stink. The mountains will be soaked with their blood. All the stars in the sky will be dissolved and the heavens rolled up like a scroll.
Okay.
All the starry host will fall like withered leaves from the vine, like shriveled figs from the fig tree. Not the fig tree!
Right.
Oh, God! Anyway, moving on to verse 34.
Yeah.
You know, in the book that we're reading,
sure.
Little Maddie.
Right.
Chapter 24. Truly, I tell you, you know, with his hand on his heart.
Right.
This generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened.
There it is.
Yeah. The plain reading here is that Jesus expected these events within the lifetime of his listeners standing there before him.
Yeah.
Which is why many scholars think Jesus was primarily predicting events connected to Jerusalem's destruction in 70 CE, which had already just now happened when this was being written.
If you can interpret it that way at all, because they're literally writing this after this happened.
That's what I know.
I'm just emphasizing because I'm like, this there is no, there are no predictions in the Bible thus far.
Right.
Like zero.
Zero.
Like, and the fact that they think, like, all these people in this world think that these things are so miraculous and prophesized, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, bullshit. All this stuff was written with these things having already happened or about to happen.
Right. Like, and anybody not, with eyeballs in their head could see.
Yeah, it's not, none of this has been shocking at all.
Right.
Even into the New Testament, like, all the way through the Bible.
Yeah.
And it just annoys me.
It is annoying.
Yeah.
I will give you that.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So, what was I saying? I'm sorry. A Christian interpretation of these things differ greatly amongst each other.
Okay.
So we've got a preterist interpretation, meaning most or all of this happened in the first century, and the coming of the Son of Man refers symbolically to judgment. In Jerusalem.
Okay.
On Jerusalem.
Sure.
Okay. Then we've got the futurist interpretation where some events, yes, happened in 70 CE, but the ultimate fulfillment is still the future.
Oh, okay.
Just so you know.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. We decided that.
Yeah.
We read it. We didn't like how it was phrased. Yeah, so we decided for ourselves.
We changed this up a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. We can think whatever we want.
No big deal.
Yeah. Then there's the apocalyptic historical critical interpretation.
Okay.
Jesus expected God's kingdom to arrive soon, but the expectation was not fulfilled in the way people anticipated.
Okay.
And this whole question of did it happen, will it happen, was it happen?
Right.
Is still major historical debate. But I can solve the debate.
I don't think it's a historical debate. It's a theological debate.
In history.
Sure.
Historically, it's an event that is still being argued about.
Okay. All right.
That's what a historical debate means, that we've been arguing about, we've been debating this all through history since it happened.
All right. That's fair.
That is a historical event in and of itself.
Okay.
That this bullshit is still even a fucking question.
Sure.
Nonsense. All right. So then we move on to the fourth section. Okay. So we're almost done here, kind of.
Right.
It's the bit where Jesus is like, I mean, I am the Son of God, and sometimes I am God, but I don't know shit about shit because no man knows the day and hour.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, like, and he had some parables where he said something to that effect.
Yeah, like, my dad knows. You know. I don't know. You'd have to talk to him about it.
Right.
I'm not magic today just now, just right then when I said that. Okay, so verse 36 reads, but about that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father.
Okay.
Only my Father who is not me, except for when I am he.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So if the Father knows something that the Son doesn't, you and I argued, doesn't that mean that there's not a fucking Trinity?
Right. Like,
that can't be a thing if they're...
Yeah.
Separate.
Right.
There is no separate but equal.
Right.
Okay. That doesn't work for me. This is one of the most debated verses in and of itself in Christianity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And early Christians noticed this problem too. And as a result, there are a few different solutions that developed.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
So let's see how they twist this shit.
Yeah.
Okay. So Orthodox Trinitarian explanation is that Jesus has two natures, his divine nature, which is fully God, and plus his human nature, which is fully human.
So he's like,
he's super both.
Okay.
Okay.
And is he just, is it like,
it doesn't cross over.
Doesn't cross over. So no. Sometimes he's divine and sometimes he's not.
Right.
Okay. And
he's both.
He's both, but not at the same time.
Right.
Right.
He's never in the same room with himself at the same time.
Got it. It's okay. Like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
He's like Batman and Bruce Wayne.
Right, right.
You know, sometimes he's got his uniform on.
Sure.
Sometimes he's just at the computer.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. So in his human role, Jesus voluntarily accepts limitations.
Okay.
You know, making a sacrifice is not really a sacrifice if he has the option to not sacrifice.
Right. Right?
Yeah. 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 Okay, so that's how they get around that. Then there's the non-Trinitarian interpretation. Okay?
Yeah.
This verse shows exactly what it appears to show. Jesus is subordinate to God and not identical with God. Jesus and God are separate.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
They're not the same. There right. is no Trinity.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, who knows?
Did that solve anything for you?
Nope. But you know what? I didn't expect it to.
No.
We have so many competing religions that there is no solving this.
No.
Like, you can't solve it. Like, there is no answer.
Like,
there's no fucking answer.
Listen, even Vanilla Ice was like, if you got a problem, yo, I solve it. But if he read this, he would be like,
I don't know.
I got nothing. And that is probably why his career failed.
Someone asked him about the Bible.
And he was like,
oh, shit, I can't solve that problem.
He melted.
Yeah.
So with regard to the nobody knows the day or hour thing.
Yeah.
This is one of history's greatest self-own moments, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Every generation has predicted the end.
Okay? Well, yeah. Every fucking week, I think, lately.
But every generation has ignored the bit that says, no one knows the day or fucking hour.
Right.
You keep saying the end is nigh.
Yeah.
And to be prepared. But you, why are you saying that it's about to happen? It's going off. I saw the sign. You don't know the signs.
Right.
Because God specifically said,
no one.
You human person over there, old lady with the big hair and the high warbly voice.
Even Jesus.
You don't get to know.
Jesus didn't know.
Yeah. So that's funny to me.
Right.
And I'm going to quote that from henceforth when people are like, you better be prepared.
If Jesus didn't know, how the fuck are these people supposed to know?
I'll be like, you did not read the Bible because Matthew chapter 24,
right.
Verse 36.
Says you can't know.
Nobody's going to know. So it could be another 3,000 years, you stupid idiot.
Whether I'm an atheist or not, it doesn't really fucking matter.
Yeah.
Jesus said, you can't know.
Yeah.
And if Jesus said it, you know it's got to be true.
Because it was in red fucking ink.
It's at least true to you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So quit talking like you know that it's about to happen.
Right. Let's just stop predicting the end, huh?
Right.
It's really fucking annoying.
It is so annoying. Because you can't know. Like, according to your own fucking rule book. Yeah. In plain ink, it says you cannot know. So quit acting like you do.
To be fair, there's a lot of very, you know, not straightforward answers in this book.
This one's pretty fucking straightforward.
It's pretty straightforward,
but about that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Only God knows. So shut the fuck up.
But we keep hearing about this guy, Paul, that's going to like rewrite how shit works.
I will get there when I get there. Right now I'm in Matthew, and according to this verse, shut the fuck up about your end is nigh bullshit. Okay? So Matthew 24, verse 36 has both inspired and undercut end times date setting for two millennia, which I find hilarious.
Yeah.
Because what I got out of that is that I can legitimately say, shut the fuck up.
Well, yeah.
And not feel bad about it.
There's really nothing that Christians can say that legitimizes anything, because there's always something that can contradict it somewhere in the Bible.
But that one excited me.
Like when they start trying to get into the whole, like, I love it. It's so fun to watch or be involved in the conversations where the Christian is like, I'm going to prove this with the Bible. And it's like, oh.
Can you put that down for a minute? Because
this is going to go badly for you, right, man.
Like, you can't use the word as the definition.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, and there's always something to contradict, yeah, whatever they say. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is.
It doesn't matter.
I can find a contradiction for it.
Sure.
You know, it's just that they went down the wrong path there.
Right. Yeah. moving on to verses 40 and 41, we get two men will be in the field. One will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill. One will be taken and the other left.
Yes, yeah, we had fun with this too.
But this is where we get some interesting stuff that I mentioned at the beginning
of this episode. Yeah, the Left Behind series. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks to books like Left Behind, many people assume that taken equals saved and left equals doomed.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But look at Noah. What happened with him? Who gets taken by the flood? The wicked.
Right.
And who gets left behind? Noah.
Interesting.
Opposite, interesting. Right? Yeah. So, the dead,
But he didn't disappear, he built a fucking boat. I'm just saying. Like, if we're gonna, you know.
He got left behind, though, is what's happening here, though.
Right.
The taken were the dead.
Yeah. I see how you could interpret it that way. But this is literally, like, it's saying that they disappeared. So, like, it feels much like they just vanished off the face of the earth. The way that I took it. Now, I see how you're getting the whole Noah thing. The truth is, I don't honestly really give a shit.
Right.
Like, it doesn't really fucking matter. They're taking, like, the Left Behind series took these words, mm-hmm, and they're like, hey, these are, you know, and we have such great imagery for the whole.
Right.
Like, what is it called?
The Rapture.
The Rapture, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And you know, we always joke about we'll pet sit for you, you know, when you're gone.
Right.
So whatever.
But apparently, if we look at this interpretation,
yeah,
you and I will get taken because we're atheists, and the Christians will get to mind our pets because they'll be the ones left behind.
Yeah.
They'll be left.
Yeah. What happens if aliens show up?
We all die. I mean, haven't you seen the bacteria that them fucks carry?
Right. Well,
not to mention,
you would think that if they could travel between worlds and universes, or not universes, but solar systems and stuff, then they would have perfected not infecting a population with diseases.
Perhaps. But I'm not going to put that out there. I saw War of the Worlds.
Right.
Okay. Also, I literally just watched a science video that talked about how there's over 100 million pieces of Earth trash floating around our planet.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
We're just building a ring, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know?
Of trash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And then if one little piece, and this is pieces anywhere from microscopic to bus size.
Damn.
Just floating around up there. And there's a thing called the Kepler effect.
Yeah.
And if one little thing, it'll cascade, sure, and they'll all come falling down. Oh, it's going to be bad. And all the satellites will burn up. Yeah. And so we won't have GPS or interwebs anymore.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And shit, you'll have a satellite landing on your head in the backyard.
There you go.
Just because. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So let's hope
most that our of that's space too, trash. Too small to reach Earth, but, you know.
But we'll still, see. There's over 100 million pieces just floating, just trash.
Sure.
Human trash.
Well, I heard that the I don't know when it was happening. It might have been today, even. It was going to be soon. There was one of the remnants of the one of the SpaceX launches, mm-hmm, is set to crash into, mm-hmm, the moon.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
It was supposed to be. I don't remember what day, but
I didn't realize. Like, apparently there are like sell-by dates, basically like expiration dates on satellites. Like,
oh yeah,
that we regulate or are supposed to regulate.
Sure.
They're only supposed to be up there and in commission for so many years.
Right.
And then we're supposed to take them down.
Right.
Because, you know, they break and shit.
Yeah.
And, but every country has a different number of years if they have a mandate at all. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, y'all, can we not get like some kind of fucking, United Nations thing happening, like whatever, United Earth, like,
yeah.
Can we not get a, let's, hey, yeah, let's be humans? Because I keep saying this. Do you think if aliens came down, they give even half a fuck which part of the planet you're from or what your skin looks like?
Right.
No, they can't tell us apart any more than you could tell a goddamn lizard apart.
Right, right.
You know, like, yeah. Stop.
Yeah.
We need a, I keep calling it the UN because I don't know what else to call it.
I mean, that would be a good place to start it, right? Like, we've already got this
group. We've already got, like, it, you know, kind of set up. We just need to, like, enforce it and, yeah, build on it.
Right.
You know, like, it just needs to be like planet Earth. Like, planet Earth, all together, 1, 2, 3, go. We are planet Earth, and we are going to take care of our planet.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Joe, get your shit together.
I mean, I think that the U.S. needs to start with that. Like, that's, you know, we're problematic right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I wasn't trying to say that the U.S. is awesome in that. I'm saying Earth as a whole needs to get its shit together. Yeah,
but I'm saying that the U.S. has been one of the leaders for the U.N. over the decades and years that it's been in,
right,
in service, and we're now, not, we're right,
problematic
now. Yeah, yeah, we're yeah, a problem,
yeah, kind of sucks,
yeah,
kind of sucks for planet Earth,
right,
and all the trash that we have on the planet and now floating around it,
yeah,
big old trash ring,
right,
so gross. Anyway, many scholars argue Matthew's own analogy actually points the opposite direction from the modern rapture interpretation.
Okay.
Just so you know. So yeah. I'm right.
No, well, I mean, there is no right, right?
No,
we're talking,
but
about,
I'm right.
We're talking about fucking fiction.
You're always wrong.
Whatever.
And I'm right.
But there is no right. It's true. Just fucking fiction.
That is true. And, of course, you're right, because Matthew chapter 24 itself never describes millions of believers suddenly vanishing.
Right.
So, you know, whatever. Yeah. All right. Verse 42. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come.
Right.
Again, you know.
Yep.
And coming, to be clear, isn't necessarily coming back. Okay?
Okay.
So, the Greek word originally used here was parousia or parousia, and it meant more something like arrival, official visit, royal appearance.
Okay.
So Roman emperors made a parousia when they visited cities.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Jesus's coming carries very political undertones. The true king is arriving, not Caesar.
Okay.
Is what they meant.
Got it.
So not coming back.
Right.
The king is coming, is arriving.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Just to be clear, there wasn't a lot of coming back talk back then.
Got it.
In those days.
Right. Okay. Well, and you wouldn't, because Jesus hasn't died yet.
Right.
So.
Right.
I'm just saying.
When they wrote the book, he did.
Yeah, but.
But they were trying to pretend that he hadn't. So, yeah.
You know.
Right. All right. So we're going to finish off this chapter with verses 50 and 51. The master of that servant will come on a day. Oh, this is the last part, okay? It's the parable of the two servants.
Okay.
Okay, the faithful servant and the evil servant.
Okay.
Okay, so verses 50 and 51 read, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces, cut his life into pieces, and assign him a place with hypocrites, where there will be weeping, of course. And,
of course.
And what else?
Gnashing of teeth.
Gnashing of teeth. Yeah, you got it. The Greek phrase on this is very much debated.
Okay.
Like, instead of, like, cut him to pieces, a lot of people think maybe it was actually just, like, cut him in two.
Okay.
Like, cut him in half.
Sure.
Right? Others think even less than that. Maybe not cut them in pieces. Maybe not even cut them in half. Maybe just, like, severely punish them.
Okay.
So basically, like, we don't know what they actually meant by that.
Right.
Because the Greek is, like, questionable.
Sure.
Either way, it is extremely violent imagery. But we are supposed to remember here that Jesus is speaking in a tradition where prophets frequently used shocking images. And
sure.
They did. Yeah. They were such weirdos.
I mean, you remember Ezekiel's angel? Jeez.
Yeah.
It was fucking crazy.
Listen, the Bible is fucking wild.
Yeah.
I'm not here for it.
Right.
Isaiah describes enemies being slaughtered, and yeah, he was pretty bloody about it.
Right.
Jeremiah describes divine judgment as destruction, and then, as you pointed, Ezekiel used very graphic symbolic acts.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing is just nuts.
Yeah.
Not nuts. I'm trying to eradicate words synonymous with crazy and nuts out of my vocabulary, so apologies. It was definitely bizarre, is what I'm trying to say.
Right, right.
So, to close up, in this chapter, Jesus shifted from an earthly kingdom, like what we were talking about earlier, where, you know, it was more community-driven.
Right.
He's very much heaven in the clouds at this point.
Yeah.
He's, like, done with mankind.
Right.
Okay? He's almost, like, within one book. Like, God took a long time to get to the point where he's like, I'm going to drown all y'all. Right? And Jesus is like, no, I just needed 24 chapters. I'm fucking done. I hate you all.
Yeah.
Like, just die.
Right, okay? Right.
So earlier in Matthew, Jesus was talking about the kingdom of heaven, as I said, in very earthly terms, like the poor receiving justice and people living according to God's will, mercy, forgiveness, a transformed community. It was very Care Bears,
but
on earth,
right?
Not rainbow brights, rainbow and Carolot clouds in the sky.
Okay.
It was very earthly.
Yeah.
More like strawberry shortcake in her strawberry garden.
That is a lot of fucking 80s references.
It is. Yeah. I'm trying to paint a picture.
Yeah. No, I know. But specifically to people our age, you know.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I am my age.
Right. I know.
Duh. So the phrase kingdom of heaven in the book of Matthew is actually a Jewish way of saying God's reign. Okay.
Yeah.
Kingdom of heaven, God's reign.
Sure.
It's not necessarily like that magical place you go when you die.
Right.
The afterlife where you have tea and honey with Moses and Elijah. Okay.
Yeah.
This chapter absolutely moves everything more into Sky Daddy
territory.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
The stars falling, the Son of Man appearing in the clouds, angels gathering the chosen, cosmic upheaval, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
He is drawing from Jewish apocalyptic imagery where heaven and earth are connected and God intervenes like all the time, very dramatically.
Okay.
And history reaches a climax. Like, there's a beginning, middle, and it's about to end.
Right.
Okay. Like, it's a solid story.
Sure.
Okay. And evil powers are destroyed. Okay. Like, good will always overcome evil, according to these books.
Sure.
Okay. Now, having said all that, apocalyptic writing was not written as a way to predict the next day's newspaper. Okay.
Okay.
They were not actually trying to be like, here's the headlines about what's about to unfold.
Right, right.
They were like, so the way we read it today, we would treat Matthew chapter 24 like it's a timeline of specific events being foretold, right?
Yeah.
Ancient audiences recognized that this was just a literary genre. This is just how they talked.
Sure.
It was like very dramatic.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, when I say this is going to happen, they understood that I didn't mean like specifically for realsies it's going to happen.
Right.
And so Christians are
they're trying to get their point across in a very dramatic, as you say, way.
Right.
And
Christians are like, Christians today are like, no, he said it, it happened, and it's going to happen, period.
Right.
And it's like, oh, you're so cute the way you don't understand literature. That's adorable.
Or the times in which this was written.
Critical
thinking. Or anything
thinking
about what you're reading. Or the fact that you even read it at all is probably in very much, in a lot of question there, too.
Literary analysis, like, where do we start with you, even?
Right.
When prophets described like the stars falling, shit like that, they were not actually describing like basic astronomy. They weren't talking about like stars as the sun and this shit happens, right?
Sure.
They were describing the collapse of the order, the natural order of things.
Yeah.
Like in a big way. They were like, it's so big, it's big. And then they had to make a word for the hugest big that was big.
Right.
And so the language is very symbolic in communicating divine upheaval.
Sure.
the biggest big that ever bigged, right? But that is silly. So they had to come up with, like, you know, like, the fucking stars will fall big.
Right.
Except
right.
the tone doesn't, like, it doesn't have, like, slash S, yeah. like, sarcasm.
Right.
So, like, it just reads straight. And now we're like, the stars fell and they will fall. The end. Like, and we're like, that's a plan. The stars are going to fall.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you guys, stop. You don't know.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that, I think that Christians take all this way too literally, at least in the U.S. from
American Christians.
American Christians are something else, I'm telling you.
They are they are completely different.
Well, it's what I've grown up with. It's what I'm used to. So I understand it to a degree. But like when we talk to people in other countries or even Christians in other countries, they're much more reasonable generally.
Well, yeah. They're like, y'all need to fucking calm your tits.
Right. Yeah. Like this, what is going on in this country right now with religion is just completely absurd. And the fact that we have to get on here and talk about not reading this stuff literally, when we're reading it, we're like, this is completely asinine.
Right.
Like, how do you get anything?
It's so obviously like what you bullshit. Believe
out of this at all? Like, I understand. I can understand and be okay with you being spiritual. I can. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm fine with that. You know. But for you to take this book literally and to interpret it the way that you interpreted it and then try to apply it to laws that are supposed to be applicable in our country in the year 2026.
Right.
Bullshit. I call bullshit. This is fucking crap, you know?
It is crap. It is absolutely just backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was our Q&A from Matthew chapter 24.
Sure as fuck was.
And we've already recorded actually chapters 25 and 26. So you'll be getting those here shortly, and then
Q&As for each of those.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll have probably 3 days of straight releases, and then hopefully we'll get some Q&As out after those two as well. Mm-hmm. So thank you guys for being patient with us while we're getting these out. We just had a lot going on here recently, and we apologize, but
settling into but here new we are. Work schedules yeah. and blah, blah, blah.
We're back. So, all right. We will see you next time.
And be sure to visit us on our live Discord every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, do that. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, wife. I guess that's the end?
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.